Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. I am so glad you decided to join us again. I'm John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a self-proclaimed math geek and a hacker, encoded in projects at work and in life. She spends her days working on her startup, Popforms. As you will hear during the conversation, she is also taking some time to be with her beautiful baby boy, Jax. In the past, she worked at several great companies, including Sun Microsystems, Microsoft, and Amazon.com. More recently, she has tended to veer towards the startup world, where 1 year is like 5 years in a big company. She has held roles as developer, project manager, product manager, and people manager. Although the last 7 years, she has been a VPE CTO for companies like Moz, Decide, which was acquired by eBay, and prior to that, Delve Networks. She has spoken and keynoted many events around the country, and this conversation is a great extension and example of her insights, unbelievable energy, and her willingness to tackle new things. Now, let's hack Kate Matsudera. This is going to be a lot of fun. We have Kate on the line and Kate's three-month-old son. This is cool. So welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, guys.
Yeah, this is me and Jax.
You and Jax?
Yeah.
Nice. This is cool. I like this. We're going to get, I think, back to Jax, but let's start with the question I need to start with every time. Because you've done some really, really cool stuff, and I think you're going to go on and do some even cooler stuff, Kate. But can you tell me, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me specifically what you do that you think other people don't, that has been a big contributor to your success?
I think that what other people don't. I think one of the things that I do kind of exceptionally well is I am a master delegator. Like I mean, I know other people do it, but I kind of do it to the extreme. You know, you read books like The 4-Hour Work Week and these other books that kind of tell you, oh, you get a virtual assistant, do all this stuff. But literally, if I don't have to do something or it's not the most useful part of my time, I delegate it to someone else. So everything, you know, I'm kind of ruthless at prioritization and ruthless at just, you know, figuring out how to outsource everything that I don't have to do or I don't really enjoy doing or I'm not good at.
Nice. So how do you determine what is the best use of your time at all times? Like, is there, do you have a system in place sort of where you can figure that out?
Yeah, I generally always ask myself like three questions. One is, do I have to do this? Like, is there someone better or would someone learn from doing it? Or, you know, is there someone, you know, that in my network or my resources that could do it better? So just like, do I have to do it? The second question I will ask is, you know, what is like the ROI? Like, how will it impact my business? How will this impact my personal life? How will this, you know, just kind of like really be ruthless about like, what are the outcomes? Like, if I go and spend some time, you know, reading through a bunch of newsletters to look for interesting articles to post on Twitter, is that actually like a good use of my time? What is the ROI of that activity? That sort of stuff. And then, the third thing I will ask myself is, you know, what is the cost? Like if it costs someone, like everything you do should have a positive ROI. If it doesn't, then you really need to come up with like a better system on how you're measuring your effectiveness. And if you can quantify that, then you can kind of say, is it worth my time? Is it worth someone else's time and actually assign dollars to it? And so that's kind of how I do it. Like, is it worth paying, you know, someone $15 an hour or whatever to go and do this for me? Like, is that a positive rate? So it's kind of like those three questions with everything.
I mean, with posting an ROI and posting on social media, I think every social media expert will tell you there is no ROI to social media.
But there is.
That you can determine.
But you can determine, like, I get this percentage of my traffic from social media.
True.
I get this percentage, like, from your website and, you know, and this much converts to sales, or this, you know, based on that, like my website's doing X dollars. So if my traffic goes up, I mean, it's not a, you know, a net, you know, accurate, but you can kind of quantify and say, you know, being active on social media actually does drive positive things for my business.
Right. Now, that's true.
Always this destiny kismet kind of like the right person sees you at the right time, or someone Googles you and they see what you're posting on Twitter and they give you a shot, or they write about you in an article that you can never really quantify. And so sometimes it's just good to do, but you can also, but then you can kind of go back to the first two questions, which is like, do I have to be the person to do this? And, you know, or can I delegate this to someone else? Like, is it worth, if my time is worth X dollars, you know, is it better to pay someone who I pay $15 an hour to do this, and I can spend my hour on something else?
True. Do you ever, are you ever worried that your voice will not be projected in the correct way if you delegate that?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to come up with like parameters, right? Like that's the thing about delegating, is that you can't just delegate everything like willy nilly. Yeah, that's right. You have to delegate. You have to delegate it in a really thoughtful way. So for me, like I wouldn't delegate that to just anyone. I would only delegate that to someone who I've worked with, who knows my voice, who knows a lot about social media, who knows the articles that I read or whatever, right? Like, so someone who has been on my team a long time, where there that trust level is there. And a lot of the time, what I actually do is I like reading the articles. Like I read technical articles and leadership articles and stuff for fun. Like that's where people watch TV. I surf the internet. So I actually tend to have a lot of the links, but I don't have the time to go schedule all those in social media and necessarily write the interesting headline. And if I shared them all at 5 p.m. or whatever, when I was just reading, or, you know, but having someone to do that and having someone to like respond to things or tell me, hey, you really need to respond to this person on social media is super helpful. Because it means like, I know that my Twitter account is being taken care of. I know that everyone is being thanked that retweets me. Everyone, you know, is anyone who replies to me gets a response. And if it needs my actual response, that I can actually respond to it. You know, it sounds very like depersonalized, but it's a system.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's great. I love it.
And I'm like a new mom, right? Like we said, my little baby here. And so when you only have 20 hours a week to work or whatever, like right, which I have right now, is each of those hours matters so much. And I don't, and like I've spent a lot of time on social media before building up a following. And, you know, like I said, it's a big source of traffic for our website, popforums.com, for people who aren't familiar. And so for us, you know, or for me, it's really important that that stays active and it just doesn't like drop off the radar because I don't have time.
Yeah. And so you brought up two interesting things. So Pop Forums, of course, is this startup that you're working on, that you're leading, heading up, I believe. And then you have a brand new, beautiful baby boy, Jax, who's 3 months old, and yet you're still working 20 hours a week on maternity. I love this. How do you juggle this? How are you? Because that's a lot. That's a lot for anyone to take. Yet you have that hustle and you still have that drive to do big things in business and yet big things like personally.
Yeah. I mean, I juggle, right? Like this morning I did a conference call with my team while I was walking him in a stroller outside. They know, I mean, they don't mind. Right. And I typically do walking meetings anyway, where someone else is taking notes. And so I'm on the phone with them, and we're a distributed team. So talking about, you know, some big things we have planned, and I'm walking him in the stroller and getting some exercise, right? Got to lose the baby weight. I mean, right now I'm doing this interview with you while I sit on the floor of the nursery and, you know, my little guy's like doing his tummy time, kind of playing, on a play mat. So, I mean, I'm multitasking, which you can argue is maybe not like the most effective thing, but you know, when you're running a startup, you can't stop. You have limited runway, you have limited opportunity, and I you know, but at the same time, I think it's important to take maternity leave, both because I want to enjoy my baby and I want to be a good mother. But also because I think when you run a company, you have to think about the future. And I have female employees and I don't want to have a company where maternity leave is 6 weeks, because I don't think that is like the right thing for families. And so I would probably have like shut off completely if I could, but I, you know, I can't run the company and do that. So I'm taking this kind of extended maternity leave where I'm planning to be on maternity leave for a couple more months, but I'm working part-time, and that I think is sending the right message to my employees, which is that, yeah, I'm taking time off to spend time with my baby and I value that. And if you have a baby, like, you're going to be able to take maternity leave too, like, but you can obviously take more, but you know, at the same time, I'm also there if they need me. So I think it's, you know, it's a hard balance. I don't know if everyone else would do exactly the same, but you know, those are two big things on my mind, was like, how do I keep my company going and successful and, you know, keep growing? And how, at the same time, you know, this is my first child, but you only have the baby's this young once, and it's like you blink and they're grown so fast already. Like, I didn't want to miss that time.
Yeah, no. And it's true. My daughter's now 9 and it's crazy how fast it is. But I mean, people that can have so many excuses about, they don't have time to do this, they don't have, like, and you are literally like running and growing a startup and a baby, and it's amazing. And yet you sound so calm and just like in control, like, oh, I just went for a walk, had a meeting with my team with this. Wow. Stuff that most people would just make excuses why they can't do it. You're just like, well, this is how I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, I try to schedule conference calls with, like, when I try to do a walk every morning with him so he can get out of the house and see something other than like the couch in his nursery. And then I, you know, and I need exercise, and I try to do my conference calls at the same time. And I just, and cause I'm not doing anything else. Right. And as long as you set expectations, right? Like, when I got on the phone with you, I'm like, do you mind that my baby is here? Is that going to be a problem? Because if you set the expectations, like, people aren't going to be like, oh, that's so unprofessional, you know? Especially in a startup, like, your work and your life are blurred.
Yeah, they are, absolutely. And I honestly think they should be. That's probably the healthiest way. And you don't neglect either side at all, right? You get to nourish both of them.
Well, and for me, like, I love what I do. Like I said, I read articles on the internet for fun. Like, that's my idea of, like, relaxing, right? Where some people might consider that, like, research or work. And so when you love what you do, it also doesn't feel that much like work. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I absolutely do. It's and I think that that's what you have to search for. I think you do, to find that. Otherwise, you won't find the energy to grow a startup or any new project. You mentioned walking meetings, though.
Yeah, walking meetings. Well, I was just going to say, I actually don't believe people should necessarily find they love what they do. I think you have to learn to love what you do. Versus finding, you know, trying to do what you love. Like, I love playing video games too, but I wouldn't be proud to say that's what I did for a living. But
wow, that's a good way to put it.
But you can learn to be like, take a lot of pride in your work and what you're doing. And I see it as like an art, like a passion. Like, I want to be exceptional at what I do. I want to build a really successful company. So to me, those things don't feel as much like work because I'm so passionate about it, which is versus saying I want to make a career out of playing video games. Do you know what I mean?
I do. And that's a great way to put it. That's a really great way. So do you, at this point, with the new baby, do you have, say, a morning routine, like, say, the first 30 minutes of your day that you could walk us through?
Not really. I mean,
because you don't get to work. It's supposed to be a work routine.
You have a weekly routine that I think is really valuable. So I'll talk about that because I think that is sort of interesting. So on Mondays, every Monday, I spend the first part of my morning, like the first hour, really thinking through like what is the most important things that I have to get done this week? Like, what is, you know, the things that are my, like, if these don't get done, I didn't have a successful week. And I call this my Monday morning. We call it, my whole company sort of does it. We call it our ninja planning sessions. And I budget a whole hour, and of course it doesn't usually take an hour. It takes like 15 minutes to do that part. So I use the rest of the time to also reflect on like my yearly goals or my monthly goals and kind of just be like, am I making progress on these things that are strategic or important? And if there are like hard things that I'm thinking through, like our product positioning or how to make our features appeal to a certain market segment or whatever, I will maybe use that extra time to think through some of those. But it's religious that it's like an appointment I set with myself that I never miss at any cost. Like I make sure I do that hour at the start of my day. And sometimes with a baby, it's maybe a little later than it would be normally, but I really make sure a point of starting my Monday with that before I actually sit down to do any work. I also, I do our team meetings on Monday morning, so sort of similar, so that our whole team can get alignment around those things and make sure that we're all kind of heading in the right direction. And then I do a couple of my one-on-ones on Monday as well in the afternoon, but mostly just because like I feel like that helps get the week started off right and make sure all the priorities and everybody's really clear and has what they need to get their job done. Because I tend to think more in weeks than in days.
That's probably a good way to do it because, I mean, otherwise, I think the days are too small. You need to really stretch it out a bit to make your goals achievable, right?
Well, I try to time block my days, but I feel like sometimes, like, I believe that you have an ebb and flow in how you work and how you think. And, like, if I haven't got any sleep the night before because my wonderful baby, you know, decided to, like, wake up a lot or something, then, you know, I'm not going to be that useful the next day. And so I think it's really important to think about my work in a time frame where I actually can meet my deliverables. Otherwise, every day I'm just letting myself down. And that's not a good emotional place to be in.
Right. Awesome. So can we move on to doubts and fears?
Please. Sure.
One of our biggest fears as entrepreneurs and as human beings is being wrong and not knowing the answer to something. And I was reading your blog earlier, and you talk about overcoming self-doubt. Could you walk us through how to be wrong or how to overcome that self-doubt when we think we are wrong?
So I think that, my gosh, I feel this like still every day. Like even today, I was like walking, and I think you. Oh, you, Jax has an opinion on this. I think I was walking, and I was, and I was like worried. I'm like, I'm worried my company's gonna fail. I'm worried like we're profitable, but just barely, you know. And I constantly worry like, what if the thing we're gonna launch doesn't succeed? Like I've invested so much, and you know how, and so I feel like. Part of it is like being an entrepreneur, like it's just going to happen. So I don't think you can ever really necessarily overcome it. It's more like strategies to handle it, right? Like one of the biggest pieces of advice I got from an executive coach, which I think is really valuable, is that is she told me to write things down because a lot of the time the things in your or talk to someone like externalize the feelings in some way. Because a lot of the time what's going on in your head, it's like so much bigger than it actually is. And it feels worse and it's more fearful and all these things. But when you actually say, what's the worst that can happen? And you kind of write down, what am I actually afraid of? And you actually articulate it, you realize, well, it's actually not that big of a deal, right? Or it becomes a lot more tractable than this fear kind of bouncing around in your head. The second thing that I would say that helps me a lot is, once I've kind of figured out exactly what I'm afraid of or this worst case scenario is to think through like, well, what are all the different ways you could solve it? Like, even if there are ways that you wouldn't actually do, just like think through them because it kind of helps you like play out your options. And this is great to enlist someone else. It's like brainstorming, right? Another thing that I talk about a lot is like you have this imposter syndrome too, where you feel like you can't do it for some reason. I just read Ben Horowitz's book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, and he said at one point that when every entrepreneur he asks, like someone asks them the secret of their success, I can't remember if it was him or someone else, they say that it was, I didn't quit. And so I think there's also that tenacity in that, knowing that even if you don't think you're good enough or you don't think you have the resource that you need or you think you can't do it, like just believing that you can and like not quitting and just persevering like through it is, I think, really helpful. And then, you know, the other thing that I would say, I can give you all kinds of strategies. This is something I do.
It's good. I like it. I
know. All the time. I mean, I think the other, you know, really big thing is to like get help, because I think when you are an entrepreneur, you're a CEO, it feels really lonely and you don't always feel like you can talk to people about the feelings that you have because you would demoralize them or hurt them. And so you hide it and you are less transparent or less authentic. And that actually, I think, is a detriment to your company. So when I feel really stressed, I will talk about it really openly with like my employees or my co-founder and just be like, hey, I'm kind of stressed about this. You know, and maybe not in like the direness of it or like the, you know, but like, here's this problem. Like, how can we think ourselves out of it and just enlist them help? Because they all have a vested interest in helping. And if you're thinking it, chances are they are probably thinking it too. And so by getting it out in the open and being able to talk really transparently about it, you know, yeah, it can demoralize some people. Yeah, it can make people like worried. But at the same time, like, you have brilliant people working for you and they all, more than anyone else, have the interest in helping you be successful. So like, not enlisting their helps is like, I think, a lot, you know, less intelligence than, you know, trying to shelter them from your own, you know, fears or worries.
Yeah. Excellent. I love that. Like, transparency is such a big thing and it does help, right? To let other people know, and especially that you're human and vulnerable. And I think people can relate to it and show that they have these same issues and we can work through them together.
Yeah.
So I have one question left for you, Kate, and it's an easier one. It can be business related or non, but is there a book that comes back into your life every 6 months or so that you just need to revisit and reread?
This one, well, I mean, there's a few, there's not really every 6 months, but there's a few pivotal books that have really made a difference in like how I see the world. So the one I would probably say is The Slight Edge, which is this philosophy, if you haven't heard of it, of just doing a little bit, right? Like that not success and failure doesn't happen overnight, but that it's a product of a lot of small decisions over a period of time. So if you think about like weight loss, if you don't eat the cookie, you're not going to lose weight, right? Or you're not going to be 10 pounds heavier. But if you don't eat the cookie every single day for a year, well, that's actually going to make a difference, right? Just like reading 10 pages in a really good book, or, you know, taking a walk every day with a stroller. It's those little things that will add up that gives you kind of the success or pushes you towards your goals, not necessarily like this great thing like, oh, I ran a marathon today. Does that make sense?
It does. It sounds really, really good. I even love the title, The Slight Edge.
It's a great book. And it talks a lot about it. Basically, it uses the analogy of compound interest, like on your money, and just thinks about like the compound interest of like learning something new, the compound interest of like lifting weights or getting exercise, right? Like, yeah, it's really hard when you go and run your first mile. But then when you run 2 miles, 3 miles, it gets easier, right? Because you're gaining shape, right? It's that compound interest of exercising.
Yeah.
So it's, and it applies to success in business. It applies to everything. So it's just being smart about how you spend your time and making smart little decisions every day.
Cool. I'm definitely downloading this book and I will put it on the show notes for everyone. Cause it sounds really.
Yeah. I like I said, I wouldn't read it every 6 months, but it's one of those books that philosophy has changed my life. And it makes me make a lot smarter decisions like every day. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I absolutely do. That's cool. I'm gonna have to rephrase the question because that is a better question. So Kate, can you tell everyone just where they can find out more about you and your business?
Yeah. You can check out our company website at popforms.com, popforms. And you can connect with me at at Kate Matz on Twitter. I actually do read everything people like reply. And you could, but you can also email me at kate@popforms too, if you are just really interested in anything. I'd, you know, always love connecting with smart people.
All right. Well, Kate and Jax, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. This has been a very, very fun conversation. And I just want to thank you guys for taking the time out of your day to come on the show.
Thanks for having us, John.
That was a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Kate and Jax. So did you get it? Did we find it? I think we did. Let's get the hack.
Well, I was just going to say, I actually don't believe people should necessarily find they love what they do. I think you have to learn to love what you do versus finding, you know, trying to do what you love. Like, I love playing video games too, but I wouldn't be proud to say that's what I did for a living.
And that's the hack. Beautifully said, Kate. I think it's a mistake that lots of people fall into early on. There's a lot of people that try and teach you to find what you love and then go into that as a business. And I think there's two things wrong with that. One thing, maybe your passion, if it's playing video games, maybe it's just not the right place for you to make good money. And then the other thing is that I think that if you're in that and you get stuck in building a business in something that maybe is just your absolute passion, you might just learn to not like that as much. I love to play drums and I love to travel. I didn't make a business around those two things. I built a business around something, around software and software to that helps people and fixes issues people are having. And that makes me money. And with that money, it buys me time and freedom to then travel with my family and to